listening to IDEA, the podcast about improving data engagement and advocacy. I'm Brianna Wham.
And I'm Shannon Sheridan. In our episodes, we'll be bringing you interviews from real-world data professionals who are engaging their researchers in new and novel ways.
We'll also be reviewing the literature and keeping you up to date on what's getting published that's worth a read, or in your case, a listen.
We hope you'll join us as we talk with our colleagues and see what's working, or what's not, in the wider world of research data management.
So welcome everybody to this month's episode of IDEA, as we're kind of kicking off the new year, thinking about maybe some New Year's resolutions. One thing I think we would all like to see a little bit more of is researchers including funding for data management and curation in their grants. I see Brianna laughing over there. I know I'm not the only one. That would be a nice new leaf for people to start turning over.
I just love the thought of that being a researcher's New Year's resolution.
So if that is on some researchers' minds, one of the big things that I think we've always run across is that it's really hard for researchers to figure out how to include data management support in their grant for the first time if it's something that they're not used to having to include, not familiar with at their institution, and, you know, a couple of other reasons it might be more difficult and therefore adding barriers to them actually including it. So that's why we're pretty excited about this article that we're reviewing this month. The title is A Tiered Model for Data Management, Curation, and Sharing Support in Grant Proposals and Budgets. And it was written by Andrew Johnson from the University of Colorado Boulder. And it was published in the Journal of eScience Librarianship fairly recently, just in November of 2023. And like always, we will link to it in the show notes for you.
And Shannon, you touched on a really great point there, is that it's really hard right now for researchers to include this information in their budgets because it's ambiguous. It's hard, especially for the first time, to estimate what are various data management and sharing costs going to be. And the reason this article is interesting and the reason that we selected this article for this podcast is that many of us are offering these types of services, but we're doing it almost in an ad hoc way, or people just happen to know it exists. And we all wonder, why do people not know about our services? And this is an example of a way to make it extremely clear of how do you engage with us, what information are you going to need to know, and what is it going to take? And it's going to depend on what your needs are. And it just outlines it perfectly clearly.
Yeah, it's not so much that the ideas of the services that they're supporting are unique. We see them in a lot of different places, but how they are actively engaging with researchers by literally just writing it down and taking the guesswork out and the, oh, well, it depends who you talk to and that sort of thing. Like, it's a formal service that is a lot easier for researchers to see and include and really cuts down, I think, on the barriers to them accessing these kinds of services because it takes out a lot of that uncertainty. So that's why we're excited to talk to you about this article today.
And so what's great here is that at the University of Colorado Boulder, they've developed this Center for Research Data and Digital Scholarship. And within that center, they have a unit of people that supports data management and sharing. And it's a collaboration. Those people come both from the libraries and from research computing. And they're able to then provide three levels of support: a basic support, infrastructure support, and enhanced support that we'll go into in more detail about what each of those are. But what's really interesting about how they've developed these levels is researchers can pick and choose from the various levels what support they need. So there might be certain components that they need from basic and certain components they need from infrastructure, and you're not tied into a particular tier.
Yeah, it's kind of more of an a la carte menu, which I think is really appealing to have all of that written out for people. And one of the things I noticed when I was reading this article is that it seems like it was based more on their experience already providing the support as opposed to like any formal instrument. And I really like that because I think local context is really important when it comes to services like this, you know, knowing what your researchers are used to, seeing what works and what doesn't in your context. And it seems to be going over pretty well. So Brianna, like you mentioned, it's offered through this center, the CRDDS, but that center has actually been around longer than this tiered support model has existed. But so far, they've had over 100 grant-related consultations. I think they said they had about 24 of those consultations involving people who wanted to actually put costs into their grants. And at least six projects have included salary and benefits for their personnel as part of their final grant proposal. And two of those grants have been funded so far. So, you know, I think those are pretty good stats that show people are starting to take to this sort of service.
Yeah, it definitely seems like they're having a lot of success with it. And I personally could see exactly how it could be successful, as we've had researchers ask for things like this when it's not already a service. So having that really well outlined and having the structure set up to enable these various tiers. And that's something that's really interesting in this article. And they give good examples of really making it an adoptable method that other institutions might be able to take on. And so just looking a little bit in more detail at these different levels of support, I want to touch on the basic support first and what that offers. So the first tier of support that they offer is called their basic support tier. And this tier does not require a researcher to reach out ahead of time to use any of these services, and they're freely available. And they include things for consultation and review of draft data management and sharing plans, support for customized DMP tool instances, education and training, as well as public access, archiving, and preservation in the institutional repository for datasets up to 500 gigabytes. Their reasoning for identifying these services into this basic support level was to include any resources that a researcher could incorporate into the proposal directly without that consultation. And this basic tier is supported by two full-time positions that are within the library.
And I think it's really nice because, you know, so many libraries do offer free services to their researchers in the realm of data management, that spelling out exactly what that includes makes it really easy for researchers to be like, okay, well, my data set's really small, or I don't actually need a lot of support, but I can still include and address data management without having to, you know, do a consultation or actually set aside funds. But for those who do need more support, their next level, or I guess calling it the next level is a little erroneous because it's kind of next to, because their other tier is infrastructure support. And so this deals more specifically with actual data storage and the cost of doing that over the long term, which I know a lot of people discuss and have issues with when it comes to grants. So this infrastructure support deals with data sets over 500 gigabytes. And basically what they do is the repository at CU Boulder charges a deposit fee per terabyte, rounded up to the nearest terabyte for those of you who are curious. And so this includes that deposit, but it also includes large-scale active data storage for large amounts of data that are collected during the grant process, whether or not those are going to be shared or published later on from the project. So you can curate and put it in the repository, or you can also take advantage of active storage for your research data during the project. Now, this is available at any time to all of the campus researchers using the same fee structure, so they're not doing something specific or special within the tiered grant support model. It's more just a matter of putting it on paper and saying, this is what it's going to cost for you to publish in the repository. This has the same personnel supporting it as the basic support, so those two full-time librarian positions, as well as one member from the research computing side of the house to support large-scale storage.
Yeah, and I just want to add how awesome it is how clearly they've laid out, as you mentioned, those costs so that researchers can just include that on their own, have that knowledge ahead of time in their grant proposals for this storage infrastructure. So they've really broken it down and considered at the institution what can be subsidized, and after being subsidized, what would be the basic rate or cost for researchers. So I think they listed here that their data storage, active data storage, was like $45 per terabyte per year, and that for public access, archiving, and preservation in the institutional repository for large data would be $450 per terabyte. So a researcher can really ahead of time know what do they need to be accounting for storage.
And this was something that I didn't think too much about in terms of a deposit fee, but framing it like that is really useful, I think, to avoid the whole, oh, you can't charge to a project after, you know, the grant closes. Because if you're saying that you're going to preserve your data for 10 years, you can't continually pay a repository for 10 years because grants just don't work that way. So framing it as a deposit fee and then saying, we will take care of your data for 10 years. I think that's a really clever way of allowing researchers to include it both in grant money and then also tell the people that they're applying to, like, hey, we do have this figured out and we're going to have it available for this period of time.
Yeah, I think that's a really key point and a key distinction in how they've outlined the cost rate for these services between active storage and preservation archiving storage. Then going to the last tier, that enhanced support, this is really for when a research team determines that they really need a person embedded into their team to provide data management and sharing support. And so this tier actually enables researchers to include salary costs into their grant proposal for the personnel within the CRDDS, which is really great. And as Shannon mentioned at the beginning, they've actually already had 6 project proposals, put them on, with 2 being successfully funded at this tier. And so with that, it does require a lot more time from these folks. So I know one of the things they mentioned in consideration of determining if you can apply this tier to your support system is, how do you adequately make sure you have enough people to do that, or how many projects can you take on at once? So I think that is a challenge, as we'll talk about more later, of this support tier. But it is a really interesting tier because many grants now allow you to have personnel costs for data management and sharing. So they're able to use these people's expertise on these grant proposals and on these projects. This tier specifically does have 3 positions from the libraries, the 2 that were working on that basic support tier as well as the head of the unit for that those positions reside in within the libraries.
Yeah, and I think, Brianna, as you kind of alluded to, one of the first major challenges that the author mentioned in the support model is that scalability, especially of the enhanced tier support, because it can be really hard to determine how many grants that you consult on and get included on are going to get funded, and how many people is it really going to end up taking, and being able to provide enough people to support all of the grants that want you on their project can be tricky to predict. And, you know, there's ebbs and flows like any other sort of ecosystem that, you know, some years maybe you've got a lot of projects, another year maybe you have less. And so making sure everybody is fairly compensated for the work that they are doing and that you can meet the needs of your customer base is something that they mentioned as one of their challenges.
Yeah. And I think thinking through that, 2 of the things within that challenge that I think about a lot is, how do you select which projects you can work on? So if there's only a limited number that you can, what is the rubric that you're using to determine which ones you're going to work on? Is it just based off the expertise of the personnel that you happen to have, or are you trying to get a diversity of types of projects across your institution? I think that that is a challenge. And then I also think from the researcher side, it might be interesting to consider, are they accurately assessing how much time it's going to take for the data management and sharing personnel that they're bringing on? Because I think that could be a difficult thing if they say they only need so many hours, but it actually is going to take way more than that. Hopefully, I know with the enhanced tier, they require a consultation and they require that to happen at least a month before the proposal goes in. So hopefully that would come out through those conversations. But that's something I've thought about in my own context, if we were to do that, is how do you make sure what's being asked for is actually what they need?
Yeah, that's true. And I have to imagine that over a large enough data set here being number of grant projects that you're working on or that your service is working on, you could kind of start to set standards and guidelines like, oh, if they're just asking for help writing the data management plan, then it's roughly this many hours. But if they're looking for somebody to do active curation and they're planning on having 5 terabytes of data, it's this many hours. But when you're just getting something started up, or if you are having a lot of new different types of projects that you're working on, it's got to be just ballpark, right? Because you're just going to cross your fingers and be like, we think this is what it'll take. And I would have to imagine there's some degree of flexibility that they can provide. I know that when we support customers, like, we're always trying to be flexible and meet their needs, because we don't want to leave them hanging, because it's like, oh, well, you've used up all of the time kind of thing.
Right. Exactly. So I think you're right that the more you do, the more you're going to know. And I know, and thinking about how many you can take on per year, I think it's a similar answer, right? I think of it very similarly. I know I've mentioned this to you before, Shannon, but similar to admissions for universities, is they've figured out over time, for the most part, obviously every once in a while it doesn't quite work how they anticipate, but how many offers they can send out for how many slots they have. And I think there'd probably be a similar thing that could be worked out between how many grants typically get funded, how many of these can we take on, and how much support are they actually looking for. And I know related to all this, another challenge that they mentioned in their article was that there's been a lot of position turnover just in this field as new opportunities arise, as there's more demand for this type of work. And also alongside with the pandemic happening, there's just a lot of turnover happening. And that this is challenging when you're writing people into grants, because typically you have somebody that has a certain expertise, they're written on for a certain amount of time. And then if they happen to leave, and that project gets funded, because also there's a long time window between when proposals go in and when you find out that they're funded, how do you then continue to support that effort, especially given how challenging it can be to rehire positions quickly?
That's actually, and the type of position, because that was one of the things that was mentioned in the article where, you know, if it's a full-time person on a grant project, it's easier for the PI to rehire that full-time position than if you lose somebody in this particular scenario, somebody from the CRDDS left for another position, it's much harder for them to rehire that position that's only part-time in the grant project because they're not looking at the PI hiring that position. You're going to have to go through something that deals with central funds instead of grant funding for hiring that new position.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So I think in these challenges, it's really thinking through, how do you make sure you have the right personnel to be supporting each of these tiers? Because all of these tiers are not successful without the people behind the support infrastructure.
So then on top of those first two challenges, you know, scalability of the enhanced tier support and dealing with the turnover in positions, the third challenge that they mentioned, which I personally think is the most interesting to me, is the idea of monitoring the grant proposals that are using their resources or their services. So right now, the author says that outside of the researchers that actually come and talk and do the consultation with the CRDDS, they don't really have a good way of becoming aware of grants that write in their services that are perhaps the free ones. So things like the education or the data management plan consultation. They said sometimes they might not even be aware that grant funds were used for support until several years after a successful proposal is submitted to a funder, which can make it tricky to do metrics and figure out how to improve a service. That last little bit was my addition there, but I'm thinking about why this is a problem and like what I would find it a problem in an institution, because I'm very much like, how do you improve what you can't measure?
And also, how do you staff a service appropriately? How do you know what the demand is going to be? And having that information would allow you to actually have preemptive staffing for the needs that are coming up.
You're right, because if you just take two examples from their basic free support, the education and data management plan reviews, let's say suddenly 90% of researchers are saying, hey, I'm going to use this service and they're going to review my DMP and they're going to come and teach a couple of free sessions for my lab. CU Boulder is not a tiny campus. There's a lot of research happening there. And depending on how many education sessions, how many reviews of data management plans are happening, you might very well need to bump up your staffing support. But if you don't see that because you can't see the grants that are going out, you don't know to do that until suddenly it's the fall and there's like 50 people that are contacting you to come and teach a class for them.
Exactly. And I think it's the same reason why sometimes we joke, like if everybody was aware that this existed and all came at once, we wouldn't be able to be ready. And this would actually enable you to be ready.
Yeah. I wonder if there's any institutions out there where the people that provide like data management support in any kind of flavor are looped into the grant application process. Because from what I've seen, it seems fairly ad hoc and that very few people outside, perhaps like the PI and maybe a couple people they're working with. But it seems like there's not a good way to get an overview of like how many applications are going out, how many are being funded, how many are being rejected, what grant institutions are they going to? And I just think that would be a really interesting and helpful metric for anybody that's engaging with researchers over data.
Agreed. It's something I know I've talked with our research office here about, and frequently do ask questions like that. Like, for instance, when we were preparing for the new NIH requirement for data management and sharing plans, I was able to pull information from them to be like, how many are we sending out every year? What are the time of year that these proposals are typically needing to go in? And what colleges are submitting them? So that we could then prepare to provide support primarily for what are the major colleges that are submitting those, make sure they are aware that this is coming, make sure they're prepared, and then also have in our timetable, okay, these are the times of years we need to make sure we're ready for an influx of support needs.
Yeah, and I'm sure people wouldn't love the idea of how many grants did we not get bandied about, but I feel like there's got to be somewhere for that relationship to develop so that it's beneficial to both parties.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is actually going to be a really interesting place for what's the utility of machine actionable data management plans here. So as data management plans are moving into this machine actionable space, are we actually going to be more easily able to pull information out of those and do things like notification systems? So anytime somebody mentions the institutional repository in their data management plan, it sends a notification to the people supporting the institutional repository.
Yeah, and I think I am also a fan of machine actionable DMPs, but I do think we've probably got a way to go, not only to making sure that like researchers are using them and comfortable with them, but standardizing it across an institution. Like, it's very easy for somebody to either just have a Word doc that they keep on their computer that they just update for every grant versus somebody that's like using a tool that was designed at the university that actually can send those notifications. So I like that idea though, Brianna. Like, eventually we'll get there and that could be one use for them. We have the technology.
I think the other place though that's interesting is when are data management plans required? Because, right, that's the way that we're saying we can maybe get some of this information, but it doesn't help us with how many people are going to review their data management plan. And most institutions, at least here in the US, are not requiring data management plans. So it's only when it's a sponsored project that requires a data management plan.
And speaking of uptake of these services, I am kind of curious, and this wasn't something that was touched on a lot in the article, but how this service is being promoted to researchers and actually getting it in front of their faces to know that this exists. And this is kind of tied into that metrics and, you know, monitoring grant proposal that we just talked about. But are they understanding and applying this tiered approach correctly? You know, or are people slipping through the cracks? Like, oh, you really should have actually had a consultation for your project, but you only put the basic support, so it never was brought to the CRDDS.
Yeah, and I think that touches on the thing we were talking about before, also with their challenges about, are they selecting the right tier support for their research needs? Or are they saying, oh, there's free support, I'm just going to use that so that I don't need to put grant funds, since grant funds are already tight, we all know that, into the data management and sharing component. So yeah, I'd be curious to see, maybe if they can get into more monitoring or hear more user stories, how that's working for them. And if there is that clear understanding, and as you said, also, how is it being promoted? Is it word of mouth, where there's only aspects of the tiers being understood, or are people really seeing the full table of tiers that they present in the paper?
Yeah, I always find the advertising interesting. Maybe it's because I'm a remote worker. So, you know, figuring out how to get that information out there and in front of eyeballs is always, always interesting to me, and seeing what people are doing.
And just thinking into kind of future service development and offerings, I am curious, and so would love to hear how our listeners kind of think about this as I'm also considering it. What other things could be included in this tiered model of support, and what would their costs be? Because I think that is how we need to start better supporting our researchers in applying these practices, is laying it out clearly and making it actually an adoptable practice where they know, here's what I need to do. If I want to use this and there's a cost, here's the cost, and just making it extremely transparent, because it is a new thing, and making sure that there's all that information is readily accessible to them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm already thinking about how I can adopt this at PNNL and how we could use it, because we do. And I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but we're like entirely grant funded, which means a lot of the extra support that we do, we have to charge back to projects. So one of the things I did for library services was I literally created a menu. It's even formatted like a menu with the help of our creative team. So it actually looks very nice, and not like I put it together on Microsoft Publisher, which is 100% what I did. But it lays out like all of our major services and gives a rough time estimate of what it would cost. And I think that's a really helpful advertising technique because it's like, here's all these things you didn't know we can do, and roughly here's the cost.
So Shannon, it sounds like you could also make a menu for data services, and you'll have to let us know how that goes.
There you go.
So with that, we're going to close out this episode. Feel free to take a look at the show notes for access to this article, where you can really see how well they've laid all these services. And maybe you'll be able to adopt a similar approach.
Thanks for joining us all, and we'll see you next month.
Thanks for joining us, folks. We hope you enjoyed this episode of IDEA.
You can find the resources from today's show in the show notes.
Our theme music is by Scott Holmes. And a big thanks to the Research Data Alliance Interest Group, Engaging Researchers with Data, for supporting our work.
If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to rate or review us wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you next time.